Welcome to another episode of Comic Syndicate. Check them out at thecomicsyndicate.podbean.com and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. And now, here are your hosts, Josiah.
Welcome to another episode of Deep Dives and Rabbit Holes, the podcast where we talk about anything and everything. I'm your host, Josiah, at ForTheVillain on Twitter, at Comic_Syndicate on Instagram. Hello, everyone. For any new listeners that's never listened to a Deep Dives and Rabbit Holes before, this is a podcast about any topic. It's a full topic breakdown. We do homework. I do homework. I pull out numbers, dates, people involved in whatever topic I'm breaking down. And then I give my thoughts, opinions, experiences if I do have them. And it's just a breakdown, water cooler talk for the most part. These are always interesting to do and pull off. The only thing that sucks about doing a deep dive and rabbit holes podcast is the fact that I have no team. So any homework that gets put into anything is completely is researched by me and edited by me and put out by me. So it's a lot of work. This one in particular, I have had an idea for the longest time, for at least a year now. I've had the information, the homework printed out and ready to go since about November 2020. So I've been sitting on this one for a while. I've recently had a little bit of time to edit and figure out, okay, what's the best way to put this together? Let's take this out. Let's cut the fat here. Let's trim this. But this week's topic is going to be odd. and very pop culture-y, which I don't really normally go pop culture routes for a deep dives and rabbit holes. So this beginning portion, breaking down this particular story, might sound a little overwhelming, and it might sound even a little convoluted, perhaps, but follow the story, and then I'm going to give closing thoughts. And I know you guys are probably going to say, this motherfucker should have just kept his closing thoughts out, and yes, I could have definitely done that. And looking back now, I don't know how this is going to sound when I toss it out after I edit this show, but I want to give you guys full context. I want to give you guys full background. I want to give you guys dates and give you names of people that were involved in this. And this is going to be dope, dude. Just follow along, guys. This one is Spider-Man, Turn Off the Dark. When you guys know what that is, this is a musical production on Broadway. That was music was put out by Bono and The Edge. Yes, from U2. So yeah, it was a 2010 Broadway production. Why is this interesting or intriguing to Josiah that he thinks it's worth talking about? Well, let's start off in 2002, guys. Tony Adams, who did the Pink Panther movies with David Garfinkel, his protege, an entertainment lawyer, and Andrew Lloyd Webber, who, I don't know if you guys have heard that name, he's a world-renowned English composer. He's written for The Music of the Night, All I Ask of You, The Phantom of the Opera, I Don't Know How to Love Him, Jesus Christ Superstar, Don't Cry for Me, Argentina, from Evita. So he's a well-known dude, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. I've never seen anything on Broadway, at, one of the, theaters in Segerstrom, in Santa Ana. I did see, the adaptation that they did. I want to say Monk. That sounds fucked up. Jehovah's Witness people. That sounds terrible too. That the dudes from the South Park dudes did. That's one of the few things that I've seen show-wise. Anyways, what have you guys seen? So anyways, to put this into context, guys, Andrew Lloyd Webber made a comment in 2002. I'd like to thank rock musicians for leaving me alone for 25 years. I've had the theater all to myself. Okay, now this is 2002. Let's jump now to Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark as a musical based on the character of Spider-Man with music and lyrics by Bono and The Edge of U2 and a book by Julie Taymor. She's an American director and writer of theater, opera, and film. She did the stage adaptation of The Lion King, which I believe that one, well, actually, here you go. King received 11 Tony Award nominations, earning Tamar Tony Awards for Best Director and Costume Designer, and was honored with more than 70 major arts awards worldwide. In 1998, she became the first woman to win the Tony Awards for direction of a musical with her staging of The Lion King animated film. All right, guys, so that's an important name. Glenn Berger and Roberto Aguirre-Sarcasa. The story incorporates elements of the 2002 Spider-Man film and the Greek myth of Arachne, Ovid, and tells of Spider-Man's origin story, his romance with Mary Jane, and his battles with the Green Goblin. It includes highly technical stunts, such as aerial combat scenes and actors swinging from quote-unquote webs. Why is this interesting? It gets so much fucking better. The Broadway production was notorious for its many troubles. Several actors were injured performing stunts, and the opening night was repeatedly delayed, causing some critics to review the quote-unquote unfinished production in protest. Following negative reviews, Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark suspended performances for a month to retool the show. Longtime Spider-Man comics writer Roberto Aguirre-Sarcasa was brought in to revise the storybook, and director Julie Taymor, whose vision had driven the concept of the musical, was replaced by creative consultant Philip William McKinley. By the time Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark officially opened on June 14, 2011, it had set the record for the longest preview period in Broadway history with 182 performances. That's 182 preview performances. They are still working out all the kinks, guys. Critical reception of the opening was better than for the previews, but mixed, with praise for the visual effects, but little enthusiasm for the book and score. Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark is the most expensive Broadway production in history, with a budget of $75 million, and also once held the box office record for Broadway sales in one week, taking in $2.9 million over the 9 performances. The production closed on January 4th, 2014, at a massive financial loss. All right, so just to add more context, the description of it, although often described as a rock musical, the production, quote-unquote, treads new ground that some commentators have asserted, quote-unquote, have effectively distanced it from its peers and caused some confusion. When it comes time to describe the show, The Edge stated that he is unsure what the description to use for the production because, quote-unquote, it is elements of rock and roll, it's elements of circus, it's elements of opera, and of musical theater. Bono, admitting that his description is a little pretentious, quote-unquote, has referred to it as a quote-unquote pop-up pop art opera, noting that Julie Taymor is calling it a quote-unquote rock and roll circus drama. He also described the production as wrestling with the same stuff. Okay, as Reich, Blake, Wings of Desire, Roy Lichtenstein, and the Ramones. Okay. They came out as, I'm sorry, a 60-minute CBS special stating that it would be called a comic book rock opera circus. So, guys, we have so many descriptions of what this thing is supposed to be, and no one can quite describe it. Like, that's fucking hilarious. We've moved out of the rock and roll idiom in places into some very new territory for us, including big show tunes and dance songs. That's Bono's. Quote, the production was described early on as the most technically complex show ever on Broadway, with 27 aerial sequences of characters flying and engaging in aerial combat. The production also includes a multitude of moving set pieces that put the audiences in the middle of the action. I mean, what can go wrong, guys? And enough projections onto giant screens that Bono has said that it is like the three-dimensional graphic novel. The original story treated the origins of Spider-Man similarly to the story of the 2002 film, but wove in an involved story about a villain based on the mythological Arachne. A Greek chorus of four teenagers narrated the story. In the rewritten version, the plot hews closer to the comic book and film and trims and transforms the role of Arachne into a kindred spirit into Spider-Man's dreams. That's the background, guys. All right, let's go to the Broadway production now. Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark had no out-of-town tryouts because of the technical requirements of the production, which were designed for the Foxwoods Theater on Broadway. The musical began previews at the theater on November 28, 2010. After many delays, the official opening gala night took place on June 14, 2011. If you guys ever need to rewind these dates, it's a trip. And these numbers, they're going to get more staggering still. The creative team originally included director Taymor and choreographer Daniel Ezrelo, with a scenic design by George Tipson. Costume by Aiko Ishoka, I'm pretty sure I butchered that, and lighting design by Donald Holder. An expanded creative team. So they're bringing in top-notch people, top-notch cast, a few known actors, but a lot of big Broadway actors and actresses. On November 19th, 2013, producers announced that the show would close on January 4th, 2014, citing falling ticket sales and no longer being able to get injury insurance for the production as reasons for closure. Having run on Broadway for over 3 years, the production failed to make back its $75 million cost, the largest in Broadway history, with investors reportedly losing $60 million. All right, guys. It still gets fucking gnarly. So that's how bad the show did. They hired top name everything across the board. There's a lot of things about this story that makes it odd and interesting and bizarre. And this is now the early development. And this is one of those gnarly things. In August 2002, Marvel announced that Tony Adams would produce a stage musical based on the Spider-Man comics. Adams approached Bono and The Edge to be involved with the project. In turn, they enlisted Julie Taymor to direct. In October 2005, Adams... Okay, God, dude. This is weird. Okay, so, again, Tony Adams was going to be the producer. In October 2005, Adams suffered a stroke while the creative team was assembled to sign contracts. So as Bono is there, and Edge is there, the Edge goes to grab a pen, because Tony, this is not bullshit, guys. Tony Adams says, I don't have a pen on me. The Edge is like, they were in his condo, I believe, and I'm going to go through it right now. I need a pen. Edge goes to go pick up a pen for him. When he comes back, dude slumped over. Now, here's an exact quote. Tony Adams was the original producer of Spider-Man. He was an Irish impresario. Beautiful man. He's the one who convinced Marvel in the first place to let him do Spider-Man, the musical. And he could have persuaded anyone to do anything. He was just that sort of person. He's the one who persuaded Bono and The Edge to get on board. And after a whole lot of wrangling, this was early on in the process, back around 2005. He finally got all the contracts in order and went over to The Edge's apartment to have him sign the deal. Bono had already signed. Julie had already signed. Everything was finally coming together. And Edge went to go get a pen. And when he came back, he found Tony Adams slumped over. Tony Adams, who was still in his 50s, was dead the next day from a stroke. I'm going to put put a pen in it right there. At what point do you say... Okay, it's not jinxed, right? It's not jinxed, right? Delays and budget overruns. So that's just the beginning of the contract signing, guys. Readings of the musical were held beginning in 2007, but the production was delayed several times. By early 2009, the Broadway production ran $25 million into debt, the New York Post reported, and work on it was suspended. The budget for the project was reported in March 2009 to be a record-setting $52 million. On August 31st, 2009, the Walt Disney Company announced plans to buy Marvel Comics. Despite the previous Broadway success of their Disney theatrical production subsidiary, Disney made no move to assume control of Spider-Man or help the production financially. Disney said straight up, "You know, this ain't my bullshit." I don't want any part to do with this. I mean, so much what the fuck in this story, guys. Okay, so Disney made no plans. In late 2009, Bono asked Michael Cole to step in as producer. And by May 2010, Cole had raised the money to proceed with the project. Much as it from Jeremiah J. Harris, former chairman of Live Nation, who is also listed as a producer. Meanwhile, the musical was eventually scheduled to open at the Foxwoods Theater on February 18, 2010, but the production was delayed again until fundraising could be completed. By November 2010, the production was estimated to cost $65 million. In addition, the show's unusually high running costs were reported to be about $1 million per week. A new opening night of December 21st, 2010 was scheduled, but this was delayed until January 2011, so just 1 month. That's not bad. Reportedly due to a quote-unquote tremendous amount of creative commotion behind the scenes, as more time for rehearsals was needed. In December 2010, the official opening was again pushed back to February 2011 to provide more time for the creators to stage a new final number, make further rewrites to the dialogue, and consider adding and cutting scenes, perhaps inserting new music. Miss Tamor and the producers have concluded that Act 2 had storytelling problems that need to be fixed. A final postponement was made once again, pushing the opening to March 15, 2011, in order to allow Tamor to fine-tune the production and instate a new ending. The New York Times reported the show's opening would be delayed for the sixth time until summer 2011. Again, maybe jinxed, cursed, like, okay, I'm still going to get to the worst parts of this. The latest delay included a shutdown of previews. The shutdown lasted from April 19th to May 11th, 2011. In order for the new creative team to implement changes, preview performances resumed May 12th. In March, Cole and Harris said they shut down the previews because they felt the story needed some work. Sorry, guys, I had to look at my time there. We're going to concentrate on those three areas over the next 3.5 weeks. They also announced that Spider-Man stunt performer Christopher Timmy would be rejoining the show. Oh, dude, poor dude. By April 2011, the capitalization was reported to have grown to $70 million. And as of the opening, it was reported $75 million compared to a typical $5 to $15 million for a Broadway musical. It included $9.7 million for sets and costumes, $4.4 million to rent the Foxwood Studios Theater for 2 years before performances began, and $2.2 million for flying equipment. The weekly production budget was $1.3 million. Bear with me, guys. It gets better. Cast and creative team replacements. Okay, who are we going to start with here? Okay, so technically they're burning through cash, and I'll save it for the closing statements. By this point, it's running a little long. Previews are not going that great. It's a little expensive. Yet they're burning a pretty little penny. Now, they are, again, hiring top-notch fucking actors and Broadway actors and actresses. So I could go off through these names, but I'm going to skip it, so I'm cutting some fat here. All right, so Tamor left the production in 2011, March. Left the production, Philip William McKinley joined the show as a quote-unquote consultant, and Chase Brock joined as an additional choreographer. Now, here we go. This is where it gets, I don't want to say violent. Cast injuries and additional replacements. Now, this is the curse? Anyways, curse or jinx? I don't understand. Six people were injured while working on Spider-Man, after two stunt doubles were injured during various flying sequences in rehearsals. Safety inspectors from the New York State Department of Labor reviewed these scenes in the show, and in February 2011, cited the show for two workplace safety violations. The United States Occupational Safety and Health Administration fined the show $12,600 in March 2011 for three serious safety violations. The Actors Equity Association also looked into the incidents. One of these injuries occurred when Spider-Man's stunt double, Kevin Aubin, broke both wrists. Another actor, quote-unquote, had broken his feet on the same move a month earlier. There's still more, guys. Natalie Mendoza, who was originally cast as Arachne, suffered a concussion during the first preview performance on November 20th, 2010, when she was struck in the head by equipment in the wings. She did not report the accident to producers until November 30th. Okay, so 2 days later. And she has a giant welt on her head, I'm sure. She appeared in the second performance against her doctor's advice. Wow, what a trooper. The role involves several fly-in sequences, including one in which she is spun upside down. Mendoza later felt ill, and America Olivo, her understudy, played the role during her nearly two-week absence. Mendoza returned to the show for the December 15th evening performance, following the preview of December 20th, 2010, when Spider-Man stunt performer Christopher Tierney was injured and hospitalized. I'm sorry. I'm not laughing. Mendoza was suspended. Mendoza suspended her performance. Olivo again filling in for her. So she sees Dude eat shit and she's like, yeah, I'm not coming back. On December 30th, she announced her permanent withdrawal from the show. There you go. She was replaced by TV Carpio, with Olivo remaining as understudy. When Carpio was injured in March... What fucking A, dude? Wowzers. And Carver was injured in March 2011 and withdrew from the show for 2 weeks. Olivo performed the role again. She's like the backup quarterback of fucking, like, top-notch backup quarterback to these people, dude. And I don't understand any of this. In that December 20th preview, Tierney fell 21 feet off a piece of scenery when his harness was not connected to the safety cord, leaving him to free fall through the stage and into the orchestra pit. Tierney was Tierney was hospitalized at Bellevue Hospital Center. He was released for rehabilitation on December 28th. The December 20th performance was ended prematurely. After rehearsals for stricter safety procedures involving the harness, the show resumed with the evening performance on December 23rd. Tierney was released from the New York University's Rusk Institute of Rehabilitation Medicine on January 5th, 2011. He returned to the show for rehearsals on April 25th, 2011. I know I said it was going to sound convoluted with dates, guys, and I'm trying to go through it and be concise, but I want to paint this giant picture for you guys. All right. He returned to the show for rehearsals April 25th. And performed in the show on opening night. Carpio, now, was injured during a March 16th performance, reportedly hurting her neck and left the show for 2 weeks. So the backup quarterback now gets fucked up. Or a third-string quarterback by this point. On August 15th, 2013, actor Daniel Curry was hurt by apparently being pinned under a piece of equipment and suffered leg trauma. Wow. All right, on September 10th, 2010, Carney and his band performed, and this is so funny, the band wrote a song called Boy Falls from the Sky on Good Morning America. Carney, Bono, The Edge all performed on May 25th, 2011, final episode of American Idol Season 10. At the Nokia Theater in Los Angeles singing Rise Above, Carney and Damiano performed If the World Should End on... Okay, so this is all the show, guys. Like, the music they have for this Broadway show, they're now putting them out. Like, all right, we got this up and running. The music's good to go. Or so they think. Now, these are the final wrap-ups and woes. All right, guys. So, June 14th, 2011. Broadway's most expensive musical opens today, but can audiences expect a flawless performance? Sorry, I had a cough there, guys. Even Bono, who with bandmate The Edge composed the score for Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark, admitting to the Wall Street Journal today that there's still a little ways to go, end quote. Although if you've been chronicling the play's troubled production at all over the last year, Bono's remarks should come as no surprise, with woes that included horrific injuries suffered by several cast members the department of its director, as well as less than enthusiastic reviews from critics. These are the top 8 calamities that made Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark seem doomed from day one. First one, producers arguably bit off more than they could chew from the beginning with the show's price tag. At $65 million, it's more than any other Broadway show in history and caused relentless pressure for the show's success. The director, Julie Taymor, acknowledged that it was a huge undertaking from the start, telling the New York Times that the show had to be a massive hit with the audiences to cover its cost. All right, she was being fucking optimistic. Number two, right before rehearsals began in July of last year, the public relations team, headed by Broadway press agent Adrian Brian Brown, resigned after working on the Spider-Man project for 3 years. Number three, just before previews began in October, Kevin Aubin, a body double for Spider-Man, was seriously injured during a demonstration for ticket brokers and sales agents. Wow, and they're just trying to sell it. While performing a flying stunt, Aubin slammed into the stage after being catapulted into the air and broke both his wrists. So now we know how he did it. Afterwards, the second actor admitted that he injured his feet performing the same flying stunt a month earlier. The injuries garnered enough media attention on the show's acrobatics that the New York State Department of Labor began safety inspections on the show's flying and safety devices. Number four, the safety inspections caused the first delay of many of the show's openings. While performances were originally set to begin November 14th, the opening date was ultimately pushed back to January. On November 28th, the show held its first preview performance to lackluster reviews. David Rooney from The Hollywood Reporter called it a chaotic, dull, and a little silly. While the New York Times said Spider-Man is not only the most expensive musical ever to hit Broadway, it may also rank amongst the worst. Even Bono told ABC's Nightline, "We don't agree with the New York Times." Well, we don't disagree with the New York Times, so he's on board, dude. Number five, adding to a growing litany of injuries, Natalie Mendoza, a lead actress in the musical, was hit in the head by a piece of equipment hanging from a rope during the first preview performance. She suffered a concussion and had to take a 2-week leave from the production. In late December, Mendoza, who played villainous Spider-Woman Arachne, decided to leave production. Number six, just a few weeks later, another performance, Chris Tierney, one of the many actors who plays Spider-Man in the musical, fell 20 to 30 feet while performing an aerial stunt. It was a near-death accident in which he broke multiple vertebrae and ribs and suffered fractures in his elbow, scapula, and skull. An audience member told WABC that things went wrong towards the end of the performance. Oh, just the end of it. Okay. Spider-Man, sorry about that, guys. Spider-Man was about to jump off the Brooklyn Bridge to go catch Mary Jane. The audience member said she was falling in slow motion. Holy shit. Direct quote. Spider-Man was about to jump off the Brooklyn Bridge to go catch Mary Jane. The audience member said she was falling in slow motion. He was supposed to swoop down and catch her. Instead, his safety cord or cable seemed to have broke, and he went flying into the audience, and he crashed down into a hole in the set. It sounds so Looney Tunes-ish to me. Two following performances were canceled so crew members could put a safety plan, costing roughly $400,000 in ticket sales, according to the New York Times. I might have been talking too much, guys. I keep coughing up a storm. Okay. So much what the fuck, dude. It's a Looney Tunes Broadway musical. Number seven. In January, the Spider-Man production team pushed back its opening a fifth time to March 15th. Excuse me. Producers said the delay was to fine-tune aspects of the show, including the new ending. 2 months later, a sixth and final delay to June 14th followed several federal safety violations and the departure of its director, Julie Taymor. In late March, TV Carpio, the actress who replaced Natalie Mendola as Arachne, was injured during a battle scene on stage during a preview performance. Everyone's getting their ass kicked during previews. She was the fifth castmate to sustain an injury since the show began production. Okay, cursed? Or like, what the fuck? Or jinxed from the beginning? Now, this is the cast album for Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark. I have not heard any of these songs before. But trip out on the names of the titles. First song is New York Debut. Number two, The Boy Falls from the Sky. The third song is Rise Above One. The fourth song is Picture This. The fifth song, it's almost comical now. The fifth one, I just can't walk away. The sixth song is called Bouncing Off the Walls. The seventh song is called Pull the Trigger. The eighth song is called No More. The ninth song is called Do It Yourself World. That's the non-comical one. Number 10 is If the World Should End. The 11th song on this album is Sinisterio. The 12th song is A Freak Like Me Needs Company. The 13th song is Rise Above 2. And the 14th song on this album, and now I want to listen to it like a motherfucker. The 14th song on this album is called Turn Off the Dark. Okay, guys. What the fuck? Like, the background on this already is what the fuck. Now, so that's the show for you. That's not the end of this podcast yet. I'm going to give you the second run through and final recap of what the fuck happened. So we have Andrew Lloyd Webber making a comment in the beginning. I'd like to thank rock musicians for leaving me alone for 25 years. I've had the theater all to myself. So who gets a light bulb fucking moment? Just to spite this dude. That's right. Bono on fucking Edge. Not Edge the Wrestler. They're like, you know what? You know what we can do? Let's work on a play to spite this fuck. Like, I was trying to find research on, like, I had zero idea there was beef between the duo of Bono and the Edge and Andrew Lloyd Webber. But with the huge stipulation, now they're like, okay, who's the best director out? And it's Julie Taymor. So they say, they get her on board. They say, fuck it, let's do it. So they also get that done. They also assemble a killer fucking cast. I probably shouldn't say that, especially after going through all the numbers and stats. But they're straight up assembling this prolific Broadway fucking cast. Now they're ready to start chewing some fucking bubble gum and start kicking some fucking ass. Like, this team is ready to go. It jumps now to, this is my recap. It starts now, jumping to October 5th, Bono, Edge, and Julie Taymor are feeling pretty fucking money. They're pretty fucking tits. They're feeling like the mega fucking bucks. As they meet up at Edge's apartment to finally sign these documents for this paperwork with Tony fucking Adams. That's right, Tony fucking Adams. He's the Pink Panther guy. He's fucking the shit, dude. So as T-Man, Tony, is about to sign, Edge realizes he forgot his pen, so he walks to the next room to quickly grab one. But when he comes back, what does he see? He sees Tony fucking Adams unresponsive on the fucking desk. So he had a stroke, yes, and he died the next day. So unfortunately, the next man up to helm everything was homeboy, David Garfinkel. Who the fuck is David Garfinkel? Now, here's where it gets weird. So they hand the reins over to Julie Taymor and everything. They're doing table reads now by 2007. And by this point, just doing table reads, the budget now has reached $52 million, which is record-setting by this. They now pull in new advances and technologies that were not yet used up at the time. So in that instance, Julie Taymor then started this new spare no expense, throw everything at the wall and see what sticks mentality. All right. So this caused more problems, though, especially now before any of the bigger name castings they had yet. So they're completely short. They've ran out of fucking money and they have to suspend production until new funds are raised. And they finally do get raised on August 2009. And they still have an opening date of February 18th, 2010. Two things happened after this. We finally get to see Garfinkel show how witty and resourceful he was. And it gives Julie Taymor a chance at the script. So now opting for more swinging and flying stunts and coordination with the actors literally fighting it out over the crowd. Look. At Disneyland, they used to have an Aladdin show, and the genie was... Actually, not the genie. Aladdin and Simba, goddammit. Aladdin and Jasmine and Simba. Aladdin and Simba were flying on the carpet. Aladdin and Jasmine were flying on the carpet. Now that, you can see the wires and it looked safe-ish, but they weren't swinging them off like the way Julie Taymor decided to write these aerial combat maneuvers. Like, it sounds weird. So now this new way of thinking that she has, this theater was only used for plays and musicals. So it needed a new upgrade and overhaul, a complete overhaul and renovation to the Foxwoods Theater. The next logical step from here was to use the wires and pulley systems used for the XFL and NFL games as harnesses on tracks. I should have done more homework on that for you guys. Maybe, like, those wires are used to pull in cameras. Just think about that. And then now they're going to use these on the actors. Okay. Well, now they needed special permits for this now. So this extended construction and labor, which then caused another delay. These are all small things I found after the fact. Since Garfinkel or anyone else was unable to pay the workers, wow, pushing the play into further debt. Something odd happened during this time, though. A huge acquisition was made that Disney bought Marvel Comics for $2.4 billion. That's another deep dives for another day. And and they didn't help out at all. All right, so. Oh, man. And then just doing homework. Okay, on November 25th, 2010, the first preview finally opened, guys. So we're fucking jazzed. Preview night. How well did it open, though, that preview night, you ask? For starters, it started 24 minutes past its slated opening time. Not only that, the sets were staged were missing entire pieces. Along with these small details, look, it's fucking preview night, dude. Relax. Arachne, the main villain of the show, villainess, I guess, had a scene where she was supposed to fly across and over the audience. But due to a wiring malfunction, was stuck, suspended in one single spot, hovering over the audience. Just dangling there for 8 minutes. Like, what would you do if you were the actor? Like, you're literally just hanging around. Like, do you wave at the audience? Like, what do you fucking do? What would you do? Okay. So, it's just so fucking crazy, dude. All right. And then everyone, so many near-death experiences. And how much it cost to get everything going. There's so much, what the fuck, dude? I don't understand. I know it's weird and convoluted and just what the fuck. But in the end, who got the last laugh? Bono on the Edge or Andrew Lloyd Webber for talking shit to begin with? I don't know. This is a weird one. It's a lot. Of what the fuck? It was a curse? It had to have been fucking cursed, right? From the signing? Alright, guys. I don't know. This is weird. That's a deep dive in rabbit holes for this week. I'm at For the Villain on Twitter. Don't be mad at me. I just did the homework, and I don't know when I'm going to put this out. So I recorded this 5:29, so that should give you a timestamp on how I'm looking with my time, guys. All right, I will catch you guys when I catch you guys. Peace out.